29.
It smells of the very bowels of all that is unholy, Inkerman said, holding his nose as he stood in the main entranceway to the mound. A bit pungent, I'll admit, Yimt said, holding up a burning brand to look down a tunnel. Still beats being above ground in my book. Now let's get in here and set up home before some of the others get the idea.
Alwyn did his best to breathe through his mouth as he and the rest of the section followed Yimt down the tunnel and deeper into the mound. Alwyn doubted any of the other soldiers would be in a rush to claim the mound as a shelter. As they walked downward, the flaming brand revealed a series of masterfully worked words along the walls. Alwyn couldn't read the language, but he sensed their purpose as some kind of protective talisman. The words flowed into shapes, and soon the walls were covered in finely carved reliefs. Human-like figures of majestic proportions cavorted in a great erotic orgy of limbs and other parts, so that it was impossible to tell where one body ended and another began. Unlike the statue of the deity outside, these carvings were raw, unadorned by paint, the naked sandstone taking on an almost flesh-like hue as a result. Alwyn gaped, fascinated and horrified at the same time, as they entered a large room, presumably a bedchamber, although there was no furniture to be found. Feelings welled up inside him that he had felt before, but as yet had not had the chance to do anything about. He found he was breathing fast and took a long swig from his canteen, trying to look everywhere but at the walls. Unlike Alwyn, Yimt always seemed at ease and ready to pounce at the same time. There was something about the way he just owned the air he breathed and the space around him that other men respected and feared, even if they couldn't say why. Alwyn knew some of the why, though, having seen the dwarf in action. Yimt was combing out his beard with the end of his small wooden dagger. Every so often a bug would flutter free of the tangled mess and zip off toward one of the flaming brands that were lighting their new temporary home. The smell of the cave, for it was hard not to think of it as such, was actually less foul now that they were deep inside it. Either that, or they were becoming used to the smell. Whatever the case, Alwyn began to think staying the night wouldn't be so bad after all.
"Here," Yimt said, holding out one of his canteens to Inkerman. "Have a swig of this, and prepare to lose some money."
Inkerman recoiled and shook his head vigorously.
"I'll thank you to keep that vile swill away from me, and not to tempt me with your sinful games of chance."
He looked around at the rest of them.
"Have you no shame? You sit in a room of decadent, lustful filth. But I will not. I am a man of faith."
At this, the dwarf cocked a bushy eyebrow, a feat made all the more spectacular as it disappeared under the rim of his shako.
"Indeed. How is it, then, you come to be part of this jolly band of brothers? My sad story is too long to recount here. Poor Alwyn there suffers from the stupidity of youth. No offense, lad, you'll grow out of it. And the rest of these ragged scarecrows," he said, waving a hand at the section sitting around the room, "are highwaymen, robbers and thieves, all falsely convicted, no doubt, and press-ganged into the service. But what about you, eh? Maybe it's time we all got to know each other a bit better, seeing as we're all one big family now."
Inkerman sniffed and spat on the ground, nowhere near Yimt, then spun around on his heel, bent low, and stomped away up a tunnel.
"Another time, then," Yimt called after him.
The other soldiers laughed and sent a few catcalls of their own after the farmer. Yimt waved them to settle down.
"All right, let him be. Every man's got a right to think what he will, and that goes for the lot of you, too. But with rights comes responsibility, and one of them is to keep a good chunk of what you believe to yourself."
There were a few puzzled stares, Alwyn's included. Yimt shook his head and gave an exaggerated sigh.
"Use what little intelligence you haven't drunk away, lads. Think on it. This army has got more races than a dragon has scales, and each one's got a way of looking at the world different from the next. Take our major up there. Not only is he an elf, he comes from the other side of the ocean. And you know who lives over there? That elf witch, the Sha—
Do not speak her name!
The whole room jumped as Inkerman scrambled back through another tunnel to emerge in the room, a small white book clutched in his hand and held against his breast.
She is a pretender to the throne of the Great Father, creator of the world. To speak her name is to call her near. How can you sit idly by while her abominations crawl over the earth again? Do you not see the end is near?
Murmurs rose. Alwyn looked at Yimt, who was sitting very, very still. When he spoke, it was in a whisper that carried around the room like lead shot.
The only end that is near is yours if you keep talking like that. Your so-called great father is a great human father, who created man in his image, not the rest of us.
Yimt slowly rose to a standing position. Alwyn gasped as the dwarf slowly pulled his drukhar from its scabbard. Inkerman saw it too, and held the little white book out before him as if it would ward off the blow.
"You're one of them pure order believers," Yimt said,
his voice never rising as he took a step forward.
"I figured you to be just a Puritan know-it-all. But it goes deeper than that, doesn't it?"
"I believe in the one Creator, and his vision of a pure, ordered world for the peoples who live in it,"
Inkerman said, his voice quavering, but his eyes burning with an intensity that bordered on madness.
It is clear that his order is being challenged even as we speak. It is up to his true believers to put things right.
Is that so? And in that little book of yours, does it mention dwarves, orcs, and folk like that as true believers too?
Inkerman sneered.
There was no need to list the lesser races, for they were not created by him.
That is why the world today is polluted with magics and cults and evil. Only he should wield such power, saith the scripture.
Alwyn thought Yimt would decapitate Inkerman then and there, but instead the dwarf actually smiled.
So you admit your creator was nothing more than a flouncy wizard? We are, hear it. A couple hundred years back he and a few of his sorcerer buddies went whoring and drinking one night and made the whole thing up to impress the gals in a brothel.
Inkerman sputtered with rage.
Blasphemy! You dirt-born slug! How dare you slander him!
The drukhar whistled in the air between them and stopped an inch from Inkerman's neck. The other soldiers were frozen. It was clear to Alwyn no one was going to stop Yimt. He was on his feet and beside the dwarf before he knew what he was doing.
"I think you should put the drukhar down, Yimt," he said.
The blade hung perfectly still, a black shadow on Inkerman's shoulder. A large vein in the farmer's neck throbbed, and Alwyn imagined the blood gushing out, splattering the ceiling.
"The world would be a better place without the likes of him."
Yimt's knuckles grew white as he gripped the hilt of the drukhar.
"And you'd be hung. And then who would lead our section? Besides, you said everyone was entitled to an opinion, and this is his. I'm not saying I agree with it, because I don't. But if everyone started killing people they disagreed with, there wouldn't be many people left, now would there?"
Yimt blinked, then turned his head slightly and looked him in the face. Several seconds passed in complete silence. Inkerman's eyes darted wildly between him and Yimt, and then down to the blade that hovered beside his neck. Finally, Yimt nodded and slowly lowered the drukhar, never looking at Inkerman.
"Go pray to your creator," Yimt muttered, turning his back to the farmer, who scrambled down the tunnel and out of sight.
Yimt looked at each soldier in turn, then at Alwyn. He reached out a hand and patted him on the elbow.
"Ali, not that I'm going anywhere, but if I did, I can't think of a better man to lead this section than you."
With that, the dwarf sat down, leaning back against an impressive pair of carved breasts, and began taking apart his shatterbow, while the other soldiers hooted at Alwyn as the next king of Kalar.
"Leave the poor boy alone now," Yimt said, squinting one eye and looking down the right side barrel of his weapon. You all know he's got the smarts. Lot more than you lot put together.
What about me, then?
A soldier asked, his cheeks puffing out two enormous mutton chops of brown scraggly whiskers.
Yimt looked over the barrel to his questioner, one eye only, his eyebrow threatening to disappear again under the rim of his shako.
Buko, you couldn't dump piss out of a boot if the instructions were written on the heel.
I can read well enough,
Buko said in response, sticking his chest out with pride and hooking his thumbs in his suspenders. More laughter greeted this, and Alwyn couldn't help but join in. Buko, not much taller than Yimt, and as scrawny as a winter chicken, opened and closed his mouth in apparent outrage, then shrugged and started cleaning his musket.
"Make sure you do 'em right," Yimt said, addressing the entire section. "In a climate like this, the moisture will have your musket rusted away to dust inside a week if you don't get at it every day. As me grandmare used to say, keep your musket and your pecker clean and you're likely to live to a ripe old age."
"She said that?" Alwyn asked, finding a place to sit down between Teeter, who was puffing steadily on his pipe, and Alec, who seemed to be having difficulty holding his musket and cleaning it. Alwyn leaned over and helped him steady it, getting a smile and thanks.
"Too right she did. Full of wisdom she was. Knew more about this world than you lot put together. Reminds me of a time once away back. Still gnawing on sandstone and chunks of pottery. Seems there was a young miner who—"
Alwyn smiled and began cleaning his musket as Yimt rambled on. It was a comfortable feeling. He let his gaze drift around the room and was amazed that the carvings were losing their effect on him, until he saw one in particular that might or might not have included a goat. He grabbed the pricker hanging from a lanyard on his jacket and bent over his musket, working the thin steel needle into the touch hole, and digging out bits of dirt. If the hole was plugged, there would be no way for the spark in the pan to ignite the charge inside the barrel. It amazed him something so small could make such a difference. He looked over at Yimt, and was pleased to realize that went for people as well.
"Now who wants to live dangerously?"
Alwyn looked at the dwarf, detecting more than a hint of mischief in his voice. Yimt dipped a hand into his upturned shako and removed a well-used deck of cards from inside.
"Ante up, ladies. Elf coin and siasters are worth 12 to the Imperial Sovereign or 4 colonial mints. Nickel silver, that is, for you shady types that have a pocket full of copper."